to experience the ripple effect. The ripple effect. This is the Empowering Youth Podcast from Building Utah Youth, a nonprofit organization established in 2007 to provide powerful leadership training to the youth of our communities. And now, here's your host, BI board member, co-owner of Rapport International, and certified trainer, Brett Johnston.
All right, hello, and welcome back to the Empowering Youth Podcast. I'm Brett Johnston.
I'm JJ Chinowski.
And Jeff Gattano here.
And tonight, we have a very special episode of, two amazing, beautiful individuals. But I'm going to introduce the first person, who happens to be a Teen Leadership Breakthrough graduate. Before I introduce her, I want to talk about her personality for just a moment, because she has a very bold personality. Okay. Bold, beautiful, big. She definitely has some confidence to her. She's definitely got, an aura about her, and it's something that has been passed down. All right. It was a gift that was given to you. So I would like to welcome Savannah Kapp.
Hello. I'm very happy to be here, and thank you for your kind words. And I'd like to also introduce my mom, Monica Kapp, who honestly gave me that aura and encouraged it throughout my life.
Yeah, because we know it didn't just show up.
No, you're welcome.
Definitely not from the other side of the family.
And thank you for having me.
It's so beautiful and wonderful to have both of you here tonight, because you guys have been on a courageous journey together. And, you've fought through a lot of things together. And so we're really hoping tonight that you have the courage and you have that perseverance and you have that, the power of vulnerability. Mm-hmm. You guys have a beautiful story that will change lives, mm-hmm. that people just, it'll be so impactful for people to hear that story. So again, thank you for being here.
Of course.
And opening the floor up. Where would you like to start?
Oh, man, I don't even know. I guess I asked my mom to kind of come on the podcast because she's been my best friend through everything, my biggest support in my life, because we definitely have a different story than most. So, yeah, I guess I should just hop right into it.
Well, so then let's start back with, do you remember when Savannah was little?
Oh, of course. Yes. She's very similar now. As she was when she was little. She's always had this big personality and just beautiful, happy energy.
And so, thinking about that energy, that's something that comes natural for a lot of people, but it's not something to be taken for granted.
Absolutely.
And so in life, we're challenged.
Mm-hmm.
So do you remember when, how far back can you remember growing up?
Oh, pretty young. Honestly, I just remember we lived out in West Weber, probably since I was like three. I have memories of just playing in the fields, like you get down in dirty with the dirt. It was a good time. And my sister was my best friend and we had challenges, but it was always just a really fun childhood. And I had amazing parents who owned a family business. So I got to see them work hard for what they wanted in life.
So if you could use one word to describe your childhood, what would it be?
Happy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so that happiness of your childhood really set the tone and set the foundation for you to grow.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think the main thing for me was I always just wanted to be that happy kid. Always just be happy.
Because you grew up very blessed.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Loved.
Yes.
Encouraged, mm-hmm. challenged, oh, all those things that so many people look for. A lot of people don't get to have in their lives.
Yes.
And you definitely had all of those things.
Mm-hmm. I always say I grew up in a family of leaders because my first memories are going to Rapport graduations, and my whole family goes to these trainings, and
since you were little.
Yeah, since I was really little. And so all of the things there, they are provided in those trainings. They kind of taught me as I was growing up. And so I just got to see all these people, my family, be leaders and just be their own authentic selves and what they did.
And that started with grandma and grandpa.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. And so when you think back to being little, like that 3 year old, if you will, you've never known your parents really outside of that rapport impact.
Yeah. At that age, definitely. And then it obviously changed throughout my life. But yeah.
So what do you remember about your journey going through rapport and because that was really the start of so many things?
Sure. I went through Leadership One in 2004. I believe it was November 2004. So Savannah was 4 years old and she came down to my graduation. That was, probably her first graduation she had been to. Mm-hmm. And I don't even know how many after that before she actually went to teen leadership. But rapport was amazing. And I was so grateful that I had the opportunity to do that. And I had a career before I got married. I got married. I ended up working with my ex-husband. Just worked out better once we had kids. Because he was married to his job and so was I. And so it just worked out. But, I definitely feel like the whole, journey, like I said, again, I was so grateful for it and to be able to do leadership training like that. I had a bachelor's degree. I put myself through college. And so like for me, lifelong learning is important. I don't believe in just stopping just because you have an education. You have to build on that. And anytime someone has an opportunity to learn something, even if you think, you know what, I'll never do that. It doesn't relate to anything I do. I kind of have this attitude like, you know what, I'm going to learn it anyway. At some point in my life, I'm going to use it.
So one big takeaway from attending Leadership Breakthrough One for you.
You figure out what your greatest weakness is.
Whose greatest weakness?
Yes, my greatest weakness. And sometimes your greatest weakness is also your greatest strength.
Isn't that truth though? I mean, it is.
It really
you have
is.
A superpower.
Yes, exactly.
And you lean on that superpower.
Yes.
So what's one of Savannah's superpowers?
Oh,
just one.
Oh my goodness. Her enthusiasm, enthusiasm.
She has that glow.
She does.
Yeah.
She's
infection.
Yeah. She has passion.
She's like a positive virus.
Yes, definitely.
A happy virus.
I love that.
Yeah.
I'm going to start saying that.
You have the happy virus.
Yeah.
So was this part of your big vision and plan for your life?
Sure. Yes, definitely. I mean, I still have a career and I believe that, every day I use my leadership skills and my leadership skills were, a lot of them were formed with rapport leadership training. And they aligned with my beliefs anyway. They complemented my beliefs that everybody is a leader in their own way and everybody has value. And I hope, I really feel like I instilled that in my children, that everybody has value. And so.
Did you get that from your mom?
No, not at all. not at all.
The value piece.
No, I definitely did.
Do you remember that in the training when we were talking about, self-love and self-care and values and stuff? And mm-hmm. What were you thinking when we were talking through that?
That was honestly a really big part for me in my training was just, I had self-love, but I needed kind of to learn the values of myself, but also have like a bit of the nurturing to kind of let that self-love flower because I had things holding me back until that point.
But that's because you had started to build some walls.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Savannah, stop right there. Yeah. Would you touch on what was holding you back?
Well, I'd have to go into my whole life story for that.
Well, maybe just one thing that was holding you back.
It was my relationship with my dad. I didn't really have a close relationship with him like I definitely did with my mom. And in the letters that we have on the second night, he wrote something to me that really kind of helped me like get that moment where I was like, okay, that was what I needed. And he told me, due to the circumstances that happened when I was younger, he was like, I'm glad it taught you to be yourself. And for me, it was like, it felt good to know that people recognize I'm like always myself. And I started to really love that about myself because before then I didn't.
So when you weren't yourself, who were you?
I just wasn't me. I was a different person. I let people kind of walk all over me.
A little bit of a chameleon.
Yeah.
Follow the crowd.
Using your superpower and becoming a little bit of a chameleon.
Yeah. And it was not necessarily following the crowd, but more of just, I was lost. And I had relationships with friends kind of deplete, and then I didn't know where to go. And so it was kind of in that moment, it all kind of crashed together. And I was like, all right, this is where I learned to love myself and forgive other people that, you know, did hurt me and made me feel lost in the world.
So as we talk about this moment in time, I'm watching your mom and, you know, this, there's a lot of things that led up to this place. Mm-hmm. So to kind of encapsulate what led up to this place, I want to swing back for just a moment, Monica, and talk about the family, because the family, you know, a beautiful family in from an outward perspective, the family.
Sure. Still a family.
Yep.
Still a family, but we did implode.
Well, and that happens.
Sure.
It does. But let's talk about leading up to that little bit of an implosion. Let's talk about the family for a moment.
Okay.
What was it like?
You know,
what was going on?
So my ex-husband, Savannah's dad, who's also very involved in rapport, and you know, everybody knows my family. We had challenging childhoods as well. And, you know, with both addiction, you know, alcoholism that was in our families, divorce when we were pretty young. And so we did our best to provide this great foundation for our kids where they didn't have to suffer through that, you know.
Sheltering our kids.
Well, just, you know, they didn't have to deal with having a parent who was an addict, a parent who was codependent. They didn't have that. And I'm really glad that we were able to provide that for them. And that doesn't mean that we didn't make them strong. You know, because we did our best to teach them about unconditional love. And so then when things started to happen within our family that caused us to kind of implode, I believe that the unconditional love was really lived. It wasn't easy. It was difficult. But I believe that when you love someone that you know, if they have to go be somebody different to be their authentic self, you'll always love them. And you support them in that. And so I supported my ex-husband through his changes and what he needed to do to be his authentic self. And, you know, he and I always joke, I'm like, we get along better than 99.9% of married couples do. We didn't get divorced because we didn't get along. And
no, you did not.
No, we didn't.
That's not why.
No.
And he is a beautiful man.
He is.
Yes,
he is.
He's definitely a beautiful man and a lot of respect for him.
Yes.
You know, and the reason why I'm definitely hinging on talking about this for a moment is because, as I mentioned, from the outside, the perfect family, like there really was a perfect family. You know,
well, I would say I had 13 great years of marriage. Most people can't say they had 13 amazing years in marriage. And I did. And I'm grateful for that.
And then there's a moment, right? There's mm-hmm. there's this transition. There's this mm-hmm. time. And I will say, I'll reference, it's like, you know, a bomb's dropped. Now for lots of people. Okay. It could be things like there is a tragic accident that happens. Mm-hmm. There is a death that happens there, you know, divorce for people, no matter the circumstances, it's traumatic. And this was something that was not uncommon, but different. Mm-hmm. And I'll say it was different because for me, this was the first time in my life I'd really ever heard of anything like that. Mm-hmm. Growing up here in Podunk, you know,
sure.
And there was just a lot of there was a lot of confusion. There was a lot of loss. There was a lot of misunderstanding. And it wasn't that long after that I started to really understand the amount of courage mm-hmm. that it takes, like so much courage, because everything in this life is pulling a person in the other direction. It's so, it's just, it is. So, you know, there's just so much courage that happened and from everyone.
Agreed.
Every member of the family, extended family and all.
Agreed.
It definitely took a lot of strength from everyone, especially like everyone's values and the way they were conditioned, and they had to kind of change their belief system. And it's kind of beautiful to think about now, because before then they didn't. Well, so I should say my dad came out as gay when I was about 11. And so our whole family was very conservative. We were in a really religious community. And so it did take courage for him to come out and be himself, because it wasn't anything heard of before, especially in West Weber, Utah.
Especially since he grew up there.
Yeah.
That was his hometown. So definitely.
And knowing the family so well.
Mm-hmm. Right.
You know, it's one of these things that nobody wants to talk about. And then all of a sudden you have to talk about it. You have to dig in. You have to deal with it. And, you know, when this all happened, it was just, first, I'm sure it was just a lot of shock.
Definitely a lot of shock. Big surprise. And you know, there's
a lot of looking in the mirror.
It's actually a lot more common than what people think.
That's why I want to talk about it.
And there's support groups. There's actually support groups for it. And I went to a support group and met a lot of people who, you know, had gone through or were going through the same thing. And like Savannah mentioned, though, you know, we live in a community that has a really strong religious, influence.
And well, I would say, I mean, not across the country is that really the same, but I will say in Utah, that is definitely a big thing. The communities are very close. People know way too much usually.
Yes.
And so it's like letting people in to see your underwear drawer.
Basically. What?
Yeah, it really is. It's quite, almost quite like
fold your underwear. Yeah.
He said underwear.
I did say underwear. Okay. It's that. Just check. It's just that vulnerable. Like we live in a place where people know too much sometimes, and mm-hmm. but it's like you only. I kind of related to social media to some degree, because you still only have to let people see for the most part what you want them to see.
Sure, and I have to add this too, that, you know, having been a child of divorce myself, and my mother was very negative about my father growing up. Sorry. Throughout the entire thing, I did not want to be negative or derogatory towards my kid's dad. And I was just hoping that I could help him, you know, get the help that he needed to get through it and still be a fabulous dad.
So I want to stick with you just for a moment.
Okay.
Okay. Before we move on.
No, because that's why I brought her.
And it's important to paint this picture for just a moment, because right now we get to play Monday morning quarterback. And thinking about standing in that place for you, going through this, what were some of the thoughts and feelings for you at that time in your life?
Devastation. I mean, this is the person that I thought I had married for eternity, not just, you know, till death do we part. And then I never wanted my kids to have to go through a divorce for any reason whatsoever. And so, but.
Was there blame for you? Was there any kind of self-reflection for you?
No, not really.
Not so much?
I had no guilt, no. You know, you do wonder, you think, how come I didn't see that? But at the same time, it wasn't like he kind of changed over time. And
so there was a slow transition.
Yes, a slow transition. So it wasn't, you know, like, oh my gosh, I'm completely blindsided, you know. And like I said before, when you really truly love someone, even though it, you know, made us separate, get divorced, but I still love him to this day. He's one of my best friends and always will be. And I'm thankful that he's happy and healthy, and that is the greatest gift ever.
So if you were able to talk to someone in this life right now that is in this moment in time, what would you tell them?
You know, that life goes on, and you will continue to have beautiful moments in life and beautiful relationships and opportunities, and it wasn't easy to go through. But nothing is. There's always challenges. And I hope that through all of it, that my kids saw that I got through it with dignity and that I was exemplary of how to take the tools character. I have. Yes. True character and love and walk through that fire. I've walked through plenty of fires, literally and figuratively. And hopefully that I've set the example for them because they are going to have challenges in life. They'll be different, but they will come and hopefully they have the tools to get through them and the support from family.
So do you think the opportunity you had to, you know, participate and receive the training that you had impacted that at all?
Definitely. Definitely. I think when you go through the training and you learn to love yourself for sure and learn that you have value, but you learn to love others that you don't even know. You barely know them. And by the time you leave, you have so much love for them, so much love and acceptance. And so definitely the training impacted how I walked through all my fires. There've been challenges since then, you know, that, with my sister had cancer. I was her caregiver for 2 years. She passed away. My mother passed away. I just had a nephew who committed suicide just recently. And, you know, you take your tools out of your toolbox and you grieve and you move forward, though, and you have gratitude for all the blessings and the blessings that you had to have those people in your life and all that they taught you.
So as you hear your mom talk about gratitude and blessings and yes. self-value and mm-hmm. and love.
Yeah.
Right. And the ability to keep moving forward even when life brings you to your knees.
Yes.
Because I guarantee you found yourself on your knees.
Oh, I'm still on my knees sometimes. Yeah. You know, I have a really demanding job and there are days. Yesterday I felt this way, like, oh my gosh, can I? All right. But then you think about it and you're like, yeah, I can do this. I've done this so many times before. I'll get through it.
And you've been through harder stuff.
Definitely.
Yeah.
Definitely. Yes.
So as you hear your mom sharing.
Yes. And like she gave me those values and talked about those values way before my dad came out to me. Because when I was 8, I kind of stopped being that happy child. I had a trigger moment that triggered a panic disorder for me. I started constantly having panic attacks every day, sometimes twice a day. It made me have separation anxiety from my mom. And we just really couldn't tell what was wrong, what was triggering this, like what in my environment is causing this. And it was when I was around 8 years old. And for like 2 years, I went to therapy and I started learning how to control this anxiety. But she really was the one supporting me because during this time, that's when my dad started really discovering who he was. And there were moments where he really wasn't there. And so when I was about 10, my cousin who lived with us, I consider him like my brother, said some rude stuff to my dad and he went outside and I followed him out and he kind of just explained his childhood to me and what he was going through. And it like clicked and it was almost like my panic disorder just stopped. And it was like, I think my body recognized finally what I was sensing. And that was just him realizing that he wasn't who he wanted to be. And so when he did finally come out a year later, I kind of already knew. It was just like, I know. And so it wasn't really shocking for me because I felt it for 3 years and didn't realize it. And it did cause me anxiety, but I did have my mom teaching me like, make your anxiety your strength. And it still to this day is my strength.
So when you say make your anxiety your strength, like you spend a few moments talking to the listeners right now, yeah. because anxiety right now, it's running rampant. Mm-hmm. And a lot of it is because we put labels on things. I mean, everybody on this planet at some point pretty much has experienced some sort of form of level of anxiety mm-hmm. or stress, right? But we now label everything today. And so the minute you're labeled, all of a sudden it's like, okay, now I've been labeled. This is who I am. And mm-hmm. is that who you are?
Number one.
And how is it your superpower now?
Well, just because I really had to learn how to find moments of strength when I was, you know, having a panic moment where I felt like I couldn't control anything. You feel like you're going to die. Your heart starts beating, you start shaking, crying, and you just can't handle it. So for me, I had to learn how to find that control. And that's my biggest advice for anybody with anxiety. Find your control. Find that moment where you can take a breath and focus, because otherwise it will just control you. And you don't want to be controlled by anxiety. You want to make it your superpower. You want to hold strength within that, that you control that. And so that would just be my biggest advice. Find the control, and then it can never rule over you.
When you walked outside, you said you walked outside with your dad, mm-hmm. and all of a sudden your anxiety went away. In that moment, what went away? I want to understand that moment. What changed?
It was just like, so I was just told I was kind of like a sensory child. You kind of have a sixth sense. And so for me, it was finally like that what I was sensing was revealed. And so I finally was able to know what exactly was causing me this panic, even though I had no idea what it was.
So you were feeding off the energy from your dad.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So yeah. And even
so, do you recognize that you recognize that superpower today?
Oh yeah. I love it.
I love it.
I find myself now, cause I just got into grad school and I feel myself getting anxious. I'm going to San Diego State University and we just visited there about a week ago and I started feeling anxious and I was like, you know what? It's good. It's good that I'm feeling this way because I am comfortable where I'm at now, but this is me going into that uncomfortable zone. And I think that you should always go into the uncomfortable because then you have the opportunity to find challenges and expand on yourself and learn more about yourself. And so I find it very exciting when I start having
anxiety. I listened to her talk about this and there's so much energy around it, you know. And do you remember when you decided, did you decide you were going to class or who decided you were going to class?
Well, it's kind of funny because like, so when you have a panic disorder, your body's constantly fight or flight mode. And so
JJ's very familiar with what we're talking about.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. And so after about 2 years later, my body was in a rest digest mode and I was deeply depressed. I couldn't get out of bed. I didn't want to go to school. And it wasn't that I wanted to end my life because I had been there when I did have the panic disorder where I just wanted to end it. And I was very young. But for me, I knew there was purpose in life and I knew I wanted to go to school. I knew I wanted to do those things, but I really couldn't get myself out of bed. And so I started printing off artwork from the internet. And that's kind of the age of social media. So I was able to start talking to people outside of my community that across the country, even across the world about who were kind of experiencing the same thing I was. And it was amazing because I finally was like, I'm not alone. And I think that was just a moment of like, okay, I can do this. I can get up. And I started just getting up and walking on the treadmill and I would read books. And I read this book called Perks of Being a Wallflower. It's a really good book.
Great movie too.
Yeah, it's a great movie, but I highly recommend reading the book if you ever get the chance. And there's a quote in it that says, "And in that moment, I swear we were infinite." And for me, it was that quote that really made me go, I want to feel infinite. I want to get to that place in my life. And so I started just pushing myself and I would push myself to go to school and started finding ways to love myself and love what I was learning and kind of love the people around me, even though they didn't understand me. They didn't understand my situation. Some people bullied me and I still just learned that they didn't understand. And
they
that's
just
okay.
Didn't know you.
Yeah. They didn't know me. And it kind of just kept me pushing and going in life. And my uncle also bribed me with $100 if I got 4.0. But it was really that just me wanting to find beauty in life and just push myself. And I did finally have a moment where I did feel infinite and I wanted to go and see the world. And it made me want to go to med school. Yeah. Med school. And so it's funny because when I got told to come on this podcast.
When you got told?
Yeah. I got told by my Uncle Ricky, you know.
Rick.
Yeah. Well, asked, but. Yo,
Ricky.
You know, told to. I pulled out my rapport bag from team leadership, and I pulled out the board that you break. I don't know what that's called.
You're blocked.
Yeah, you're blocked. And it said, my plans won't work out.
Fear your plans won't work out.
Yeah, because my plan was, I'm going to go to med school. I'm going to go to college. I'm going to do this. And
how old were you?
I was 16.
Yeah, 16 years old.
Yeah.
You had a beautiful, bold goal of going to med school and the fear surrounding that.
Yeah. And so I obviously broke that fear. And I ended up going to the University of Utah. I was pre-med, and at the U, it's you're pre-med and then you also have a major. And so I went to the major fair orientation, and I was trying to find a major because
you weren't trying to. You were finding.
Oh yeah, thank you. I was doing my best to find a major, and I ran into this guy named Sean Carlisle, and he was like, "Hey, have you ever heard of anthropology?" I was like, "Nope, what's that?" He's like, study of humans. Some people know it as archaeology, Indiana Jones. And I was like, well, what would that do with health? And he's like, oh, well, you also study biology and culture, and you can emphasize in health, and med schools love it. And I was like, yeah, sign me up. I want to do it. And I actually did really bad my first anthropology class, but I had to give it a chance because that's what I decided to major in, along with pre-med. And I had also been working as a medical assistant, and I was getting
burnt out. Are you tired yet? Are you guys tired yet listening to this? It's like, yes.
Yeah. Right. Yeah.
I mean, it's exhausted is in like the energy she's putting out into her life. Yeah.
I love
Not
it.
Tired of listening.
Love it.
Yeah.
Love it.
Well, keep on getting tired.
Well, and you've obviously come a long way from that board.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
But the thing is, my plans didn't work out because I was getting burnt out working in the medical field. And I started taking this culture class with this guy, Dr. Shane McFarlane, who eventually became my mentor for 3 years. I went and did field work with him in Mexico. And I got to a point in my sophomore year, and it was during COVID, and you think about a lot of stuff when you're stuck at home in quarantine. And I had a breakdown, and I called her. It was my first week into my junior year, and I called my mom and I said, can I come home? And I just had a complete breakdown because I realized that I wasn't passionate about medicine, and it had been my plan, and it just, I didn't feel passionate about it, but I had this anthropology career that I could go down and see different cultures and understand people and still use biology, and with a lot of advice and crying and, you know, all that stuff that comes with a mental breakdown, I dropped pre-med. And it was with that I made plans to go to grad school. And it's funny because my plans didn't work out in the way I planned them to work out.
So what kind of courage did it take for you to do that?
Oh, a lot. It was bad.
It was bad. It was a full-on panic attack.
Yeah.
Because you've announced it to the world.
Yeah, it was.
You've announced it to the family. Mm-hmm. You've got the family supporting you, encouraging you.
Yeah.
You're on this mission, this path that you've chosen that's bold and audacious, and everybody's cheering you on and in your corner, and you get to this place where it's not you.
Exactly. It was tough, and knowing that from when I kind of pulled myself out of that depression, I just kept going and chugging along, and I was like, yeah, I'm going to do this. I'm going to do this. I'm going to do this, and this is my plan. And then I got to the point where I was like, I don't want to do this. And it did take a lot of courage for me to even just admit that, because it was building up, and I just let it build up to the point where I did break down, and I just finally let it explode, which I'm really grateful for, actually, because it taught me too stuff about myself, that I let things build up and that maybe I shouldn't let them build up, and I can talk to people and, you know, even if you fear disappointment, it's always better to go with what you love and you feel good about rather than just feeling awful, which is where I was at.
And I'm sure there were people that, I'll say this, there's people in your life that were like, what are you doing? Like, why would you do that? You're throwing all this away.
Mm-hmm.
And as I hear you talk about it, I cannot help but think about the parallel and similarity to you and your dad.
Agree.
Just can't help but think about it.
Yeah.
And I'm sure your mom's done the same things with life. It's just like there's...
It's, well, and I got to interrupt here. You started out, you know, at a very young age. You said this, I'm surrounded by a family of leaders, mm-hmm. self-love, unconditional love. And as you walk through your life, you got to experience that leadership firsthand that enough. I need to have self-love to, and tell me if I'm wrong, that you're like, no, I got to go a different direction.
Yeah. And well, and it's funny because I definitely have gone in a very different direction just in my entire life than the rest of my family, because it's, we own a family business and you're kind of, it's an expectation. You join the family business, you go that route. And from when I was younger, I was like, I don't want to do that.
So has that ever been said?
No, I never wanted them to be in the family business.
So that's why I want to talk about it for a minute, because it's been brought up a few times, but I believe that it's never been said, but it's been said. Does that make sense? It's like, that's Savannah's belief. That's what she believes, right?
Is that your belief?
That it was like this unsaid expectation that this
unwritten is the family law.
Business, unwritten yeah. thing. Yeah. And I want to talk about that for just a moment, because it happens a lot. Even though as a mother and father, I bet you the last thing you wanted as a mom was for that to happen. You're like, no, like no, anything
I
but
wanted
this,
her to go get an whatever education it is, and do what she wanted to
and
do.
If you want to come back and do this, right, great, right. That's all. But, yeah. but you're going to go do all these things yes. before that's ever even an option.
I think, and I'll speak for your dad and your Uncle Rico. That's Uncle Ricky.
Yeah. Ooh, Rico.
Rico.
Well, you know Napoleon Dynamite?
Writing that down.
Yeah, he's yeah. Uncle Rico. He had a van and everything when I was a little.
Exactly. But I will speak for them just to say that everybody enjoys being around Savannah. And during COVID, when she came home, she did work part-time for her dad. And everybody was just like, oh, I just love Savannah. And her presence and... You know, they just loved her being there. So then when she was going back, you know, to school full time and wasn't going to be working there, they were kind of sad. Like, we don't want to lose her.
Well, it's the energy. It's the beautiful, positive, you know, just light energy yes. she brings. Yes,
exactly. So I can see why they would want you there. But
yeah, I guess it was kind of a gray, like expected, like, you know, in the gray.
Was
a little
part
bit.
Of it, though, that you looked up to it. There was this part of, you know, there we talk about superheroes, and remember mm-hmm. in class we talk about our superheroes, our mentors, our role models. and you can't help but that's how it exists. It's mm-hmm. it's just like, even if there's all this, you know, those trials and tribulations and challenges and the ugly part of it, it's like you see this beauty and you want to be more like your mom. You want to be more like, you know what I mean? It's like following in this space.
Yeah. No, I've always just wanted, I think, I've always wanted to do what I love. And I think my dad coming out actually really taught me to be myself and to go for the things I want to do in my life. And I was lucky to have my Uncle Zeb. He ended up not sticking with the family business. He went off to Notre Dame, got his master's. He's an accountant, but he...
He's a smart one.
Yeah, he's the smart one.
And I love but him all, I'm just saying.
Just seeing that he was able to do that, I never really thought I had to work for the family business, but I always thought in my head, like, do they want me to? Like, is this something, you know? But my sister went, and so, you know, I don't have to. But no, I was definitely taught to go for the things I love. And if you're passionate about something, you should do it. And I wasn't passionate about construction, so...
So off to medical school.
Yeah.
And then a left turn.
Yeah. To graduate school.
Can we stop right there? Yeah. So did we talk about going to class, what it was like?
Oh yeah.
Can we talk just a little bit about that? Cause I'd like to hear, before you went to teen leadership mm-hmm. breakthrough, you got into class the very first night. Maybe walk us through some of that.
Oh, yeah.
Because I hear we're jumping to where you're going to graduate school, but I want to hear this moment.
That's because that's how fast it went for
you. Yeah, it went really fast. But the things you're doing is freaking amazing.
Thank you.
But I want to hear that moment that, okay, you graduate. What did you take away? What did you learn? What did you learn about yourself? Because I love where you went with self-love.
Mm-hmm.
So please.
Well, so when I started team leadership, I was very cocky before I went because I had been growing up going to rapport graduations. So I thought, I know exactly what I'm getting into. I know what's going to happen. I know how to do all these things. And it was a big slap in the face. I was humbled very quickly. Brett was one of my trainers. And the first module, you fell. And I never failed at anything really in my life because I'd been at rock bottom at a really young age. And so for me, it was just like, whoa, I don't know anything. Like, I truly was like, I don't know anything about life, but I'm ready to do this. I'm ready to experience this for myself because I wasn't really experiencing it for myself before I went. I was experiencing through my parents and my uncles and my cousins who had all gone. So it was definitely very humbling for me. And I found it very beautiful as I started creating relationships with the people in class because it made me recognize that the relationships I had before coming to team leadership were very shallow, superficial, and I was creating deeper relationships with these people I just met. And I was lost, like I said, before I went. I had just kind of had a falling out with my best friends and one in particular who I loved like a brother. And so for me, I was very lost in what I was going to be doing, who I was going to be friends with. And so just meeting these people and gaining these trusts and learning that somebody did trust me was incredible to hear, but also feel. And then when you go into the nurturing part,
who did?
Well, like myself, Phil.
When I went to the nurturing.
I just think in the team, you know, the team mindset. When I went into the nurturing and I read, my dad wrote, "I'm sorry for what I did to you all those years ago." And it was something I needed to hear because he did hurt us when he was learning who he was. He did do things that hurt us, and you never expect your dad to hurt you in that way. And so it was something I needed to hear. And I think everyone else in the room had similar moments while reading those cards. And the feeling I felt was just incredible. I started feeling that self-love, like, I am me and I love myself. I've been through hell and back and here I am. And so when you go and break the block, I was still like kind of in a shock. I was in high and I didn't break it at first. I couldn't focus, but then I was able to focus. And then that moment you're just like, bam. And I felt like when I broke that, I was breaking all the self-doubt I had for myself. And so it was a really beautiful moment. And I did learn to love myself and also nurture myself and my inner child and also nurture the ones around me that might need it. So yeah, that
is. You think about how, remember we talk about it, that it's not always about us. It's what we can give to other people.
Yeah.
And as you think about, you know, I'll just say the fight, like that your mom's been on, your dad's been on, and growing up, especially kids, it's always looking inward.
Mm-hmm.
And it's really about looking outward is where all the power is at. When we can get the focus off of ourselves, well, that's when we begin to move. And when you can start to think about, you know, the growth and it's about giving to those other people.
Mm-hmm.
So you, what was the biggest takeaway? One of the questions JJ had, what was the biggest takeaway? One of the biggest takeaways for you?
For me, it definitely goes back into the nurturing and self-love, but giving that love to others. And that's something I've taken the last 7 years since I graduated from the team leadership is give that love. Some people might not have that nurturing that they might need. And even if I don't know the person very well, I always just do my best to give that. And hopefully it gives them an impact they needed to go forward or, you know, feel that kindness in their heart and just the warmth that you may feel. So that was my biggest takeaway.
This whole world needs a hug.
Yeah.
And that's what, you know, building Utah youth rapport, no matter who I meet, I'm like, I'm hugging you. I don't even know who you are, but that's just, it's a big hug. And, you know, but that self-love that you're talking about, I really, really love what you got out of that, you know?
Me too.
So after Team Leadership Breakthrough, did you change your friends?
Yeah. And it was really hard. And my mom probably can just, she's nodding like, yeah, it was hard for me because everybody that was on my team went to different schools somewhere out in Harriman. And so we only had like social media to talk to. And so it was really hard for me to find my people. And I did actually end up having a talk with my friend who I had a falling out with. His name's Bryson. And we talked about what we felt, and it took us a while to gain our trust back. And now we just love each other like siblings again. And I'm very grateful for that because I don't think if I went to the training, him and I would even still talk to each other. And so we found our way back to each other, and I did find other friends, and my friend group is very small because it just feels better that way. We can be deeper with each other. And yeah, it took me a while, but just know you're never alone, and you will find your people. You will find your tribe. It may just take a while.
Amen to that. Mm-hmm. And you know, it's in some ways it's almost better to have zero friends than have one or 10 wrong friends. Exactly. We talk about that a lot, and you can find a lot of good advice from a podcast like this or a book or a coach, things like that. So as we go forward and we talk about your life, and maybe before we get to some of the last questions, let's talk about where you're at now and what are the next steps. You said you're going to grad school.
Yeah.
What is grad school for you? What are you going to grad school for? Because you keep mentioning.
Yeah. Grad school will be my life for like the next 10 years. But for me, when I was at the U and I was learning, I loved anthropology. I loved doing research. I did research for 3 years and it really became a passion of mine. And so my grad school gives me the opportunity to continue that research, to eventually get a PhD and then go on to be a professor. That's the plan. It may not work out that way. You never know, obviously. But I just want to go and do research and love the world the way that I've been loving it the last few years. And it's so many opportunities ahead. And so grad school is just to get more opportunities to do research and do what I love.
Awesome. I want to. So your next steps, you talked at the beginning of this podcast, you never stop learning, always improving, always progressing. That's the word I like to use, always progressing. Progress equals happiness in my life. Absolutely. Tell me about where you're going.
Well, you know, I'm going to take some time off, like, and do some self-care, because the last few years I've been taking care of, you know, a cancer patient. We've had a lot going on. And so for me, you know, I'm always reading books, you know, on different things, mostly leadership things, obviously.
What's your favorite book?
Oh, I don't even know if I
just
even,
what are you just, reading right now?
Just throw one out there.
What am I reading right now? I'm reading 3 books, but that's one of them is Strengths-Based Leadership.
Awesome.
A kind of an old one, but I'm really enjoying it because we always focus on our weaknesses and making those stronger. And this book really says, these are your strengths. Are you using them the way that you really can use them? And then I'm also reading, I just finished a book. It's about grief. And, you know, I feel like I have spent so much time on leadership and self-improvement. And really, I'm just trying to be kind to myself. And
you don't try anything.
Okay, you're right. I'm being kind to myself and gentle with myself and going, you know, I'm going to read a book about grief and how to handle grief. And the book is called The Smell of Rain on Dirt. And it sounds really strange, but it's beautifully written. It's kind of a shamanic tone to it, but it's absolutely beautiful. And it's helped me a lot with all the loss that we've had.
Awesome. So, you know, there's a guy named Jim Rohn, and he always talks about, you know, are you improving your life? How many books have you read in the last 90 days? Who are the people you hanging out with? What thoughts are you priming and baking your brain every single morning? What are you journaling every day? And when you start to talk to people, they're like, oh, I haven't done any of that. Well, that's your fault. So I love what you're doing in your life, and you're making the difference and not pointing the finger at the economy, the government, those kind of things. Cause the only thing you can control is your mind, body, and spirit. Sure. Everything else is out of your control. And I'm, God bless you.
Get a cat. Just
get a cat. Yes. And call it Johnny. Life, cause my dog's beautiful. Name is Cash. Rico. Johnny Cash.
Oh, that's smart. I like it. Rico.
So there was a book that I was, had the opportunity to read, called Finding Meaning, and it's about grieving. And, you know, the commonality in that theme is it could be you lose a friend. Mm-hmm. It could be, you know, those relationships we lose. It can be death. There's a career, you know, so many people lost amazing jobs, through the pandemic and stuff, their businesses. Mm-hmm. And there's a grieving process that's very similar for all of them. And so there's a lot of power in being able to kind of process through that and understand. And there's people all over the place that know exactly how you feel, you know, absolutely, what you're going through.
Yes. And grief is praise, or praise is grief. That's the best way to describe it. So I can show my love for the people that I have loved and that I've lost, or my job that I lost, or I through grief. You have to process it and you have to go through it to grow.
Beautiful.
Love this. Amazing. Anything you want to share with the audience before we finish up here?
I don't even. You're the one with better advice.
For teenagers?
Yeah.
I've raised a
mom,
couple.
Mom of teenagers. Mom,
we call her teenagers. Momica.
Yeah, that is my name. Yeah. I guess the best advice I could give to teenagers is just that nobody's perfect. There's no perfect adult. There's no perfect teenager. But rapport, teen leadership, like you mentioned earlier, you know, it gives you so many more tools than what you're given. And, you know, I look at like my parents and the way they grew up and my grandparents even, and I'm like, they just didn't really have a lot of tools on how to deal with their emotions, or maybe to calm their nervous system when they were anxious. We've always had anxiety. We just, none of us got to say we're
anxious.
Know
what it was. We didn't even know what it was. It was like, that doesn't even exist. That word isn't allowed in my home.
And I look back at my childhood and I'm like, yeah, I probably had anxiety too, but nobody cared. Like you just did it. And
suck it up.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. I think that if you use all the tools, and of course it goes back to lifelong learning, but all the tools you can grab onto, take those opportunities when they're given to you, especially like teen leadership. It'll give you a good foundation to go forward and really know how to use those tools to help you emotionally, physically, you know, mentally, even with your education. It just, overall, it's fabulous.
Thank you.
And you're Savannah, a
beautiful thank you. Person. Oh, thank you.
If you could tell your 16-year-old self one thing, you know, 7 years later now, looking back at yourself in that mirror, what would it be?
I think it would just be to follow what you're passionate about. Because I didn't really understand that back then.
Does that mean you love it at that time? If you're passionate about it? So when you're on this journey, finding what you're passionate about, sometimes finding what I don't like?
Yeah.
So you got to do a lot of things.
Yeah,
and there was exactly. A lot of, we talked about in action and failure. So mm-hmm. Sometimes it's about getting out there, taking massive action, doing.
Yep.
Failing,
yeah. You got to fail.
Keep failing. Because when you fail, guess what? You decide, well, maybe I don't like that. Or you know what, I get to get up and do it again, but that's where the lessons are at.
Yeah.
So what else?
Jump at any opportunity given to you. That would, like, sometimes we don't think we should go for something, but in reality, you should go for it, because if you hated it, hey, you learned you hated it. But if you absolutely loved it, then maybe it's something you should continue to do.
Yeah. When the door's open, mm-hmm. walk through it, yeah. See what's on the other side. If you don't like it, turn around, walk back out.
Mm-hmm.
That's some of the things that you get to do as a young adult. You mm-hmm. get to do all of those things before a lot of things are decided for you. And so that's one of the greatest gifts and superpower that young adults get to have in their lives is the opportunity to just fearlessly just do.
Yeah. Just do it.
That's all.
Respect, integrity, passion, personal power, leadership, enthusiasm. This has been the Empowering Youth Podcast from Building Utah Youth. To become part of the 3%, visit Building Utah Youth on Facebook, Instagram, YouTube, or on our website at buildingutahyouth.org.